Have you ever heard of seclusion rooms? Seclusion rooms in schools. There's one Connecticut school district wanting more funding for them. It's Enfield Public Schools. Now, before you go, well, that's not in our listening area. Here's what I want to know is, are they coming to our area? I'm not sure. Well, let's first talk about Enfield Public Schools. They are apparently requesting more money in their next school budget for these seclusion rooms, but they're also facing a lot of controversy surrounding them. Why? Because some have called them prisons for children. So I wanted to know from one of our education experts, not only in the state, but right here on Melissa in the Morning, Fran Rabinowitz, what she thinks about them. Hey, Fran, seclusion rooms.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good, but I have to say, I don't know if I like the sound of these seclusion rooms. So before we get your perspective on if you think they're effective, why would we even have them? What are they? Let's start with even just that basis. What
so
are
let's
they?
Let's start with that, because I probably prefer to call them timeout rooms,
okay,
rather than seclusion rooms. I think that over the years, we have perhaps in some places misused these rooms. What these rooms are meant to do is to give exactly what I said, children, a timeout who emotionally need time by themselves. They may be, you know, very volatile with themselves or with others, and this allows them the time out. But there are a lot of caveats around that. Number one, they need to be well supervised. That child should never be alone in that room. And what I mean by that is there should be certainly an adult overseeing that child. The room, the door of the room should have glass. It's usually shatterproof glass, but it should be there so that the child knows there's another adult with the child. I don't love the rooms, I'm going to be honest with you. If there were other ways to do it, I'm open to that. But there, we do have to face the fact that there are children that need time out sometimes. And that is the way that, you know, schools are doing it. Some schools empty the classroom and the child stays in the classroom with a trained adult. And, you know, I have to be clear on that. Adults that have training in how to de-escalate the child. But as a superintendent, as a teacher, I didn't love them. But I think we have to face them. And we have to face the fact that children do sometimes need that timeout. And what do? Do we send them home? You know, do we call 211? And I think, I've been told actually that some children actually ask to go to the room because they feel that need coming on, that they need time out from their classmates or the work or the teacher or whatever.
Okay, so a couple things here, Fran, because I want to make sure we are really envisioning the right thing. So when we say a seclusion room, are we talking about another classroom, like another space? I think when you hear seclusion, okay, so because when I think people hear seclusion room, I mean, I want to make sure we're debunking any sort of thoughts we have in our head. We're not talking about a padded room, almost like you would see in a prison where you know they're sitting, no lights on. You know what? When you hear prison
No, you are not talking that. Although you're talking safety. I mean, we do have some children. They're few and far between, but we do have children that when they get, very
physically violent. Yep.
Yes.
And
they
we've
can
heard
get
about
physically
that.
Violent
mm-hmm.
And they can, for instance, bang their heads against the wall.
Yeah.
So there is padding on the walls, so they can't do that.
So here's my thing with this, Fran. To me, instead of requesting more money for these rooms to be created, because I think Enfield, if I remember reading the CT Insider article correctly, they had something like 11 rooms or something of that nature. They want more. There's like $4,000 a room to make them. They want more of them. I think this screams that we need more early intervention. Where the investment comes in. And here's why I say it from just my own perspective. You know, growing up with a brother who was on the autism spectrum, very high functioning, obviously now in his 30s and doing very well. But in his early days where he had no language. And I remember being in the Fairfield School District with him. I, in fact, was placed in the classroom across the room from him because he couldn't speak. So when he had outbursts, like you're talking about banging your head, that was something that, you know, unfortunately, my brother in his kindergarten years, he did experience that. There was no seclusion room, though. It was like a sensory room. It was like where you'd go to OT or a PT room. That's the sort of room. Now, if you erected rooms like that, where you are, again, early intervention, you're having children at the preschool, the pre-K, you know, that age, go into those types of room that, again, you have a PT and OT working through those emotions or working through nonverbal issues. I could see that investment, but to just have a room, I don't know if very effective.
That's what I envision for those rooms. But I'm going to say that in all cases, in all places, we have not always done that. But that is what I envision for the rooms. It may cost $4,000 to equip the room, but it is very expensive because you need trained individuals that are supervising and working with that child while he or she is in the room. But
I feel like you need
not
PTs.
Early intervention.
Right.
You know, that's intervention after, you know, the child has become very volatile, et cetera. And so my thinking is you're 100% correct. How can we intervene early on so we need fewer and fewer of these rooms? I happen to know that in Enfield, they are trying very, very hard to keep their children in district rather than send them to out-of-district placements. And that's why they have many autism classes, et cetera. They only send like 2% of their kids out. And so that's why they're, you know, asking for these rooms. They have programs in every school. But what I'm saying is as much as possible, early intervention is really important.
Right. That's where I think the focus needs to be instead of getting to this point.
And,
right.
You know, I will just tell you, you had your brother. I had a grandchild and he was secluded in a very negative way. And it stayed with him. When we did an outside evaluation, he had PTSD from that experience. So you can be sure that I'm vigilant on that. And I really do believe that done the right way, these timeout rooms are necessary. I also have a real need to say that I, as much as possible, I like to see kids with special needs kept in the school district. And so we have to kind of be able to meet their needs in many ways. However, early intervention is the thing that I find the most promising for these kids.
Right.
I mean, I could do a whole show, more than a show with you, Melissa, on what I feel about special ed. The numbers are escalating. We're now at 92,000 students in Connecticut in special ed. I do believe every child should have the program they absolutely need, but I think early intervention would prevent much of this.
Fran Rabinowitz is here, the executive director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, and we're talking about what's called seclusion rooms. And I've had teachers directly tell me that they are in, especially our cities, where they are, you know, have kids who have hit them, have kicked them, have been aggressive, have had, you know, very intense behaviors. And so you understand why, you know, one school district in Connecticut is asking for more money to create these seclusion rooms in order to help those who have really bad behavior, have outbursts, things like that, and don't disrupt the classrooms for the other children, certainly. But Are we doing a reactionary response versus being proactive? And something you and I were talking about, Fran, which, by the way, I'm sorry that your grandson went through that. I look at my younger brother, who is one of my best friends, and I talk about him a lot on the air because I like you, I could talk about this for shows and shows on end. But it's one of the biggest reasons why, out of all five kids, four of us live in Connecticut, close to my parents, he couldn't come back to Connecticut because of his educational experience growing up on the autism spectrum. And while he's thriving, I mean, he's very high functioning and he's thriving, he's crushing it in Florida, it's been 10 years and he has no prospects of coming home here. And it's because of the trauma like you're talking about with your grandson. So I'm sorry that he went through that.
No, and he, like your brother, is thriving today, but only because we fought tooth and nail for
exactly.
him.
Yep.
You know,
exactly. And a lot of families don't have that, friend. You know, like when
absolutely.
It's horrible.
And I was, as I was going through this, you know, with my daughter, she's a single mom, and my husband at the time, I really thought about that so often, Melissa. I mean, I know that we had a lot of skills and knowledge. My husband was a principal and a school psychologist, mm-hmm. and yet it was traumatic for us to go through it. Mm-hmm. So I only know how difficult it is for many who have to, who have children who will thrive mm-hmm. if they have the right interventions.
Well, and I even saw it too, Fran. I think sometimes people might get caught up with, okay, well, you know, you're talking about kids who are special needs. But I think we're thinking of kind of a group of people, you know, kids with autism or but I think that when we look at, you said 92,000 kids in public school right now in Connecticut are in need of some kind of special education. I look at my own son. He is not autistic. He does not have a, you know, I'd say a quote unquote learning disability, but he needed PT. All of last year, yep. or OT, excuse me, we had to pay out of pocket. My husband and I had to pay out of pocket for 8 months for my son to get OT because there were no services he, quote unquote, qualified for in the public school. And I thought to myself, okay, so, it took budgetary. It took a lot of support. And my son is now thriving in first grade. But I look at the amount of kids, and you and I have talked about this, the amount of children who, you know, we wait till third or fourth grade. Now it's too late. And I mean, thankfully, we said, look, we're going to sacrifice this because our son's education is most important. Most families can't do that, though, Fran Rabinowitz.
That's what I'm saying, Melissa. And so I think we have to look at it very, very carefully. My grandson was in first grade. Mm-hmm. He's now in seventh. He's not in that school system anymore. Mm-hmm. He's thriving. But the fact of the matter is, had he not had that intervention, I'm not sure the path would have been as bright as it became.
Right.
And I do think we, I tried chair the special ed task force. There was a special committee at the legislature. And I do think we need, on a federal level as well, but we need to rethink how we offer services to our children who have disabilities.
Well, and it was outlined when superintendents and the mayors of the major cities in Connecticut were actually up at the Capitol this week, you know, asking for specifically money towards special education. How confident are you, though, that the state is going to invest in this? I mean, I think it's so clear we need early intervention spending, and we need it now. I mean, we needed it a long time ago, but we need it. It has to happen.
We need it. We need it. And I'll tell you, having been in Bridgeport, I know how much we need it. Mm-hmm. And again, I said it's a whole other discussion, but I'm confident that we will get some money. We will get the excess cost. You know, we're $90 million short in excess cost for out-of-district placements. That's, you know, great. We're going to get that money, and I thank the legislature in advance. But I'm going to tell you, that's not going to solve the issue.
Exactly.
And for anyone who thinks that solves the issue, you know, they're sadly mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much deeper and bigger issue than that, and I wish that we could just have a roundtable discussion of what really works. Because when I say there are too many kids, I don't mean that any child who needs it shouldn't have it. Right. But I do think you can intervene early on. My grandchild's no longer special ed.
Mm-hmm.
He will not need special ed. He does not need special ed services anymore.
But that's because you invested early. Invested early. And
yes.
A lot of people can't do that. And a lot of people also trust the school systems when they say, we can wait. And now all of a sudden it's too late. And now you need seclusion rooms. Now, again,
absolutely.
It's all reactionary, certainly. And Fran, I apologize because we've run out of time. But like you, I could talk about this and we will continue to talk about this, certainly during the legislative session. I hope you'll come back.
I will. I will, Melissa. I love having these discussions. I know they're controversial. I know they're ticklish, but we've got to have them.
I agree.
To make things better for kids.
I'm right there with you. Fran Rabinowitz, thank you so much for what you do and for coming on the show. We appreciate it.